Spiegel and Holmes, afternoons on the Score.
Fakes to Allen, fakes to Swift, and there's Komet. Cole Komet. Touchdown. 31 yards. What a play.
Time to get back to Bears football. Oh, look at our nice, see, now we got them on the front side. Now we got to get them on the back side. Should we give them hand signals as we're, like, doing the tease for the next segment?
Yeah, whoever's teasing the other person, do the hand signals and get them revved up. They're trained, man. They're ready.
They're polite.
They just need to be known.
They're polite, and that's a good thing for the audience here in the Blue Cross Blue Shield performance stage that we're on. And thanks to, man, look, we have been well-fed.
Villa
has fed us today, and the folks that are here.
I think the crowd is also potty trained, which is nice, I think, for them and for their families.
We did lay down paper.
Just in case. Well, there was a mini pig here in the building earlier.
He's
in
not
the day.
Kidding.
And I'm not kidding. Shane had a mini pig here, and he apparently brought it into the studio during the midday show.
Without telling them.
Well, there's that. And there was... there was excrement that left the pig's body and ended up, I believe, on the floor of the studio during the midday show.
Not sure you need to say that while people are eating.
Excrement? I think it's a very polite way to talk about it.
I don't talk about the midday show when people are eating. I would never.
We don't want to nauseate people. I mean, and you're talking about the new iteration of the midday show.
Yeah, the old one.
We used to love the old one.
Did you?
I mean, we didn't have beef directly. It was just implied beef. Why? Did you feel it?
Yeah, no, the pig pooped on the floor. For sure, it did. But it brought its own mat, and it pooped on its mat.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, that feels better.
Yeah. A batacola? He didn't deserve that.
Well, he did.
No.
He did.
Now we're finding out even more about Shane.
No, I love Maddie. Yeah, but no, the pig did poop on its own mat today.
Wow.
For sure.
All right, so that happened.
Good pig, though, Mr. Ted. Drink Hogsworth bourbon.
How do you know the pig was a good pig? How would you know the difference?
I've seen some bad ones, brother.
No, you haven't.
Yeah.
You don't have a long history with pigs.
The bad pigs turn into pork belly. I'll tell you that right now.
I think even the good ones do, frankly.
So after the poop, did Shane go, "That'll do, pig.
That'll do. Patted it on its head like that. That's a lovely movie, by the way.
It is.
It really is.
This hour is being brought to you by Busey Bank, building business, growing wealth since 1868. So
it's coordinator day on a Thursday.
It is coordinator day. Do you want to, which way do you want to go first?
Look, I love this dude too. We need to talk about Shane Waldron. Clearly, that's not the guy that's getting the love in terms of a speaker. But you have fallen for the D coordinator. We're going to get to Shane Waldron because he carried on a topic that amazingly he hasn't yet commented on that we have to get to. But tell people why you're falling for defensive coordinator Eric Washington.
I'm a fairly serious person.
Hold on, let me write that down.
Yeah, put that in your notes. I mean, I like to have fun too, but
you need to schedule it though.
I do often. when it comes to coaches talking about football, this is the meatball in me. I like when people take it seriously. I like hearing coaches talk about the game seriously. And the trend that I've noticed...
I don't know if this partnership's going to work out.
Going into 7 games, Eric Washington takes stuff seriously.
He really does. He talks up every opponent. He's got a little Lou Holtz in him in that way in terms of talking up the opponent. But I don't think Lou was doing it as a bit. I think Eric Washington genuinely gets freaked out at the quality of the NFL and is like, we got work to do, man.
Yeah, I also think that it helps because it makes it so that he can guard against players getting too high on their own supply. This Bears defense has been tremendous. Going back to Montez Sweat being added to this team last year, you look at what they've done in keeping teams under 20 points, under 21 points, at 19 points. Like, they have been dominant. And so I think some of that, not all of them, I'm not going to say that that's the only thing that allows them to do what they do, but it feels like if you have a coordinator that is looking at the opponent, and maybe he sees ghosts, or maybe he's just acting like it. But him being able to be like, hey, we have to take these guys seriously. Look at what they do. Look at how good they are. You have to be better than what they are.
Mm-hmm.
And there was an example of it earlier today. This is Eric Washington talking about the Commanders.
The challenge that we have in front of us this week is goes to the extremes. I mean, we've got a really efficient, potent offense that is a leader in most major statistical categories. They can attack you from multiple directions. They're scoring a lot of points. They're able to run the football. The quarterback has done a nice job of establishing who he is within the framework of this offense. And they're protecting the football. They're protecting the quarterback. This will be a great opportunity for us to not only evaluate our values, but to measure ourselves against a pretty good offense and a really experienced play caller. So we're excited for the challenge. We're looking forward to it. And it's going to be a great day of football for the Chicago Bears defense and the Chicago Bears team. Let Dal take questions.
Man, evaluate our values. Like, he talks about defensive football holistically from, like, what do we want to do and what are we planning to do? Not evaluate ourselves, but evaluate our values and how close are we playing and living to our values as a defense.
But that's what I mean by not allowing the defense to walk in and go, well, yeah, we're one of the best defenses in the NFL, without taking seriously who your opponent is the next week and the challenges. Plus, in this case, you have the added layer of there are two different quarterbacks that you have to prepare for. Now, he said he doesn't think that Cliff is going to change as a play caller because of it, but they're different styles of guys. Logan was just explaining to us the difference between Jaden Daniels and Marcus Mariota. I also think it's interesting, and I wrote it down from Logan, him talking about, and you were on this a couple days ago, when we were talking about the run game. Like, people think Cliff Kingsbury, and they think, oh, he's just throwing the ball side to side. He's going to throw it 75 times. That's how their offense is functioning. That has not been the case.
No, not at all. The Commanders are dominating in the run game. In terms of yards, Brian Robinson's been very good. He's seventh in the NFL in rushing yards, but it's the entire team and what they do. They've been truly great. They're second in rushing yards. They're third in attempts. They've had a lot of leads because they have a great point differential, so they've run a lot then. But it's Jaden, not just on his designed runs, but on his scrambles, and it's the effect. We've seen this with Fields. We used to see it with Vic. When you have a really good running quarterback, we've obviously seen it with Lamar, and you fake a stretch wide, and then he goes the other way, then, you know, all of a sudden, both sides are going to be susceptible because of that kind of thing. But Eric Washington's a really good hire by Matt Eberflus.
Yes, he is.
Really, like, he's smart. He's completely in control. He's as good a hire as Alan Williams was bad a hire. That's how good Eric Washington is.
Pretty bad hire.
Yeah, and he's a great teacher on the defensive line. We'd heard that, and so far that's what we're seeing. And as they're, like, a little trepidatious to make a deal here at the deadline, part of it is because he is getting a lot out of guys like Jervon Dexter and others.
When I hear Logan Paulson say that what Washington does in their run game is they spread you out, and then they're able to hit some of the cracks, like, I start going, okay, well, wait. Does that mean that this is a D-line game? Is this a game where the D-line, or is this the game where TJ Edwards has 17 tackles because he's going to be getting so much action and he's going to be maybe up in the box a little bit more? But then that leads to, whether it's option stuff or play action, are you taking advantage of because of it? Like, it's going to be interesting to see what effect what Kingsbury wants to do has on what the Bears are doing defensively. And it's possible that the Bears won't have two of their better tacklers out there in this game.
Well, with Kyler Gordon and Jaquan Brisker, and both those guys are hugely important. So, and both of them did not practice today. We've got Mark Grody at 4 o'clock with all the updates on the injury report and on with a whole bunch of great sound from up there at Halas Hall. But let's hear more from the coordinators. I'm with you on Eric Washington, by the way. But Shane Waldron, there's a couple things we need to get to with Shane Waldron. One is the first 15, which he unbelievably has not commented on until today. That's how long it has been with the Bears on bye and how long it takes before the coordinators talk. But first, something really cool, which is the play that we diagnosed as showing Caleb as having the special, where he fakes the screen left, fakes the screen right, gets Josh Hines Allen is
the, yes, yeah, Hines Allen Hines to Allen. Freeze.
Yeah, gets him to freeze.
He's just stuck. He's like,
so awesome.
What just, where, oh, bleep, even, there's Cole Kmet.
This is the problem with when the coordinators speak. We've turned the page already.
Sorry.
But we haven't heard Shane Waldron on that Cole Kmet touchdown. Here he is on that play and where he got it from today.
I mean, it's a play. I know, Kyle Shanahan did a great job utilizing it against us in Seattle. We utilize it in Seattle. It's been utilized kind of in college football for a good amount of time. So, again, those are just plays when you have some different ones that fit the structure of the defense that might pop up week to week, you know, having a good inventory of things from the past or things from around the league or around college football that might be able to be implemented in that situation. And then, you know, then it all always comes down to the players making it come to life, because, you know, the play design, you know, it's a solid concept right there, but Caleb's ability to and Keenan's ability to start with the, you know, the fake to the left right there, and then the running back with Swift going out to the right, and the, you know, the guard pull, all the action that goes into it, the ball handling from Caleb, and then Cole. So that's just a lot of preparation and precise work that those guys put in walkthrough settings or in individual settings to have a good result on the field.
How often would you say you did that play in Seattle, and what was like the hit rate? Was it always a touchdown? Did you just hit it half the time?
No, Carolina sacked us, scored a touchdown on another one. I know the Niners have used it. There's, again, it goes back into some college stuff there where it came to life at different phases. So, yeah.
I'd have to go back and look, but I think I'd have to go look, because Urban Meyer talks about that's kind of how the spread option was born at Utah, that they were running. He's really – there's one thing that Urban's – well, two. He's good at coaching, and he's good in explaining. Then there's other stuff.
I think dancing. He's really good at dancing.
He is not good at dancing.
He grinds really effectively.
That's a different thing.
How about kicking kickers? How is he at kicking
Excellent
kickers?
At that.
He's a good dancer if he's sitting on a bar stool.
That's what I mean.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a sitting version of a
letting
grind.
Someone else grind on him.
Yeah, there you go.
So I want to say when Alex Smith was at Utah that they had a play that was similar to that one.
Okay.
And that on one of the plays, the tight end leaked out, and Alex just threw the ball to him. And Urban was like, wait, what?
Oh, I remember what you're talking about.
And he's like, we should just do that more.
You turned me on to this book years ago, Blood, Sweat, and Chalk by Tim Layden.
If you're a football fan, man, and you can find, because I think it's been out of print for a little while.
Find it.
It is my favorite football book. It's called
cool.
Blood, Sweat, and Chalk. It is amazing.
It is amazing. It just like talks about how one scheme led to another and led to another, and like how people stole from each other and took it forward. But it also reminds me of, like, I mean, it's everything, man. It's life, it's music. My brother always used to talk about, like, because we're doing a funk band and we'd be listening to Parliament or Funkadelic or Little Feet or all this stuff, and he'd be like, I don't want to take too, or I'd say, I don't want to take too much from that. He said, hey, if you steal from the best, okay? Make sure you steal from the best, which
He's
is
right.
really solid advice, and actually works very well in the football set.
Oh,
steal from the best.
That's all they do.
Yeah.
Like, just look at what Andy Reid and the Chiefs are putting out there every week. And then someone's like, wait, we could maybe do that.
Steal from the best.
Or some of that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I'll try and find the clip tonight, and then we could play it tomorrow and check it. But yeah, okay. I love seeing stuff like that where the design matches the skills of the people involved.
Totally dig it. Totally dig it. All right, this is long, but we should hear it, because we haven't heard Shane Waldron comment on how he didn't have a first 15 plays and that whole kerfuffle where players had to go to him and say, can we have a first 15 like everywhere else we've been? And then he gave it to him, and that all works with communication. But let's hear Shane Waldron's spin on how that all went down.
I Pat explained to us that it was like right after the Jacksonville game that you organized the opening plays for the players, like putting them in order. Can you explain kind of like what that process was like and the impetus to do that?
Mm-hmm. I mean, there's been different places. I've been different orders of how you present the openers, whether, you know, for me, it had been priority calls where you have a group of plays on runs and passes. And then really the focus there was more on how we're communicating it to the players on that. Still a very similar process in terms of going over those, walking through those on the Saturday night. But it was really good just overall, you know, coming out of that week where we talked about that a little bit more, just as important was of the openers was the in-game communication, some of the other different things that we were doing, and really just honing in on, you know, people coming from a lot of different places, how we see them, how we want to verbalize and communicate, you know, what we're looking at each week. And so, you know, that was one of the details that came out of that, but there was a lot of things, and every week, you know, I had a chance to talk with some guys yesterday as well, and just goes back to that constant communication, and every single week looking to see, you know, where can we improve as coaches, where can we improve as players to get a better operation going.
Shane, how valuable has it been for you to be willing to adjust when you spend all offseason planning the offense and then get into the games and say, okay, I have to be willing to be flexible?
Sure, I think that's the beauty of football is that, you know, every week, every game it's a week to week business, it's a week to week situation. So the ability to adapt and adjust and overcome, whether it's adversities that are happening, whether it's something that we want to tweak schematically, whether it's how we're interacting with guys, I think that's where it's always unique. And there's no one situation that's going to remain the same throughout the course of a season. Each year is its own individual year. Each player that you deal with or person that you come into contact with, you know, is you know, has a different situation when they walk out of the building. So I think adaptability, ability to adjust, ability to communicate is something that's going to be always important in football, and that really leads to in-game where, you know, the most important time to be able to adjust and adapt in a situation throughout the course of the game and not wait until it's too late.
And when you talk about the in-game communication evolving, what changes or what things did you do to tailor that?
Yeah, I think just the, you know, the drive ends and just being in that, you know, let's let everyone decompress for a sec, go through the drive. A lot of things that we've done in the past, stuff that we've talked about, but like everything, just focusing on the detail of it and how we're going to do it and the consistency of it and the consistency in which we go about that process. And I think, you know, the great thing from the player side is seeing how, you know, willing they were. You know, there's two-way communication on all these things, and seeing just that intentionality of, okay, here's how we're doing it. Okay, we got it. And let's keep building upon, you know, how we're interacting and how we're doing it.
What was your input on how they wanted to do it?
In terms of that?
Game communication
part. Yeah, well, this is more of coaches talking to the players. Again, there's, you know, two-way conversations, all these, and just more getting on the same page of, hey, let's let everyone decompress. Let's go ahead and have a chance as coaches to go through it, take a look at the surfaces, and really similar processes, but more, like I said, honing in on that process so that way we have a good, consistent situation between every single drive.
Okay, fine. Look, he needed them badly. And I'm glad that they went to him and they fixed it. And I hope to God it stays fixed and they keep talking and giving him input, because I think he needs it as an organizer and a leader. Let me just say, when you said, as a tease for the segment, one of the coordinators has really turned into my favorite guy to listen to, I knew it wasn't this guy. Okay? I knew it. There's just... he is not inspiring. He doesn't make you feel like he is a strong and solid and on top of it leader and delegator and communicator.
But if he listens, I'm cool with it.
He better, and I'm glad that he is. But, you know, you as the mayor of Worrytown, like I didn't buy property, but the property that I'm renting in Concernville has posters of Shane Waldron on the wall.
No, that makes sense. I totally get that. Why don't we take a break? Because we need to talk to our guy, and people are going to be so happy when his face pops up on the screen here. We'll ask Jared Payton about a whole bunch of stuff, including LeBron and Bronny being on the floor at the same time. We will get his thoughts on all of that.
Hey, look at that. You're doing it yourself. That's right. It was my bad.
Coming up next on The Score.
How you doing? Hey, how you doing?
Jared Payton.
I always feel smarter when I get off the phone with you guys. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Former NFL running back.
And Payton will hit pay dirt. Touchdown, Titans.
College football national champion.
Well, Miami has erased all doubts about the national champion.
Son of Walter Payton.
Yes, still celebrating in the ring, ladies and gentlemen, the bad guy raised from up, along with Walter Payton and Walter's son, Jarrett.
Sports anchor for WGN.
Hey, real quick, while we got some grudges and beefs going on, who's the producer in? Keith, is that his name?
Yeah.
Yeah, shout out to Keith, man. Great segment off the top. I do got a bone to pick with him, though, man. He's bringing in drinks and bourbon for Wanstead, but he ain't bring me no Hennessy.
I be on these miles of hen dog, and now y'all got problems with me.
So him and I, we got beef, man. So he's got to figure out how to get me some Hennessy.
Keith says get your ass over here, Jarrett. You never come in studio.
Hey.
I needed to have maybe a shot and a half before every game of Hennessy. What you mean?
The Jarrett Payton Show today.
Jarrett Payton with Spiegel and Holmes on 670 The Score.
We love talking with Jarrett Payton. He is one of our favorite people. We've got a room full of people here in the Blue Cross Blue Shield performance stage. It's the Spiegel and Holmes Show. Thanks a lot, Villa, for bringing the pizza in. Just terrific. Everyone is having a good time here. Everyone is enjoying themselves so far. And then, of course, we get Jarrett Payton on the show. And he's on Twitch for people that want to watch. Twitch.tv/Chicago670Score. And, JP, the people here in the studio can also see you because we set it up so that they could.
Hey, guys. Oh, don't clap yet, but hey. Thank you, guys. Shout out to all the people sitting there watching your guys' show. You guys are doing it big time today, man. And always got to feel good to be able to have a studio audience while you're doing your show. I do have to say one thing. I've learned something today. Shane is so crucial to everything that goes on around there. Protect him at all costs, man. Shane, protect him at all costs.
In terms of what? Is dealing with the miniature pig or delivering pizza to a listener when they clap their hands like a seal? What are you referring to?
Yeah, I mean, that part, the picking up the poop from the pig and like...
Yeah, but Jarrett, like, the pig wouldn't have pooped if I didn't bring it here.
Yes.
I brought it here.
He's really good at creating chaos, and then he's really good at cleaning up that chaos. It's a specific skill.
That's a good skill, man, but protect him at all costs. What's going on, fellas?
Hey, man, nice to see you, Jarrett. We talked about you yesterday tangentially, and we thought about you earlier today when talking about the show, because we'll get to Bears. But LeBron being able to do what he has done for Bronny James and the fact that Ken Griffey Jr. and Sr. decided to attend on their own volition to be there last night, it made us think about fathers and sons, and because it's unabashedly nepotism. You know what I mean? It is. But it happens all over the place. It happens with broadcasters. It happens with executives. So maybe LeBron has every right to do it. We wondered what you thought about the whole thing last night and that achievement in pro sports.
Man, I was here for it. I really did. I enjoyed seeing it. And I understand where in the world that we live in now, guys, where it comes down to the social world we live in, everybody's got an opinion and everybody wants to voice their opinion. I'm cool for all that. And I'm here to read all the comments. But as a sports fan, I thought it was really cool. The interaction where he was talking to Bronny before they went in, giving him words of advice, and then them checking in together at the desk, to me was just cool. I got goosebumps just thinking about how cool that would be. And then looking back at some of the videos that Bron posted just about him being young, coming into the league, and then having his kids young and them kind of growing up around the game. And now he gets this opportunity to do this. Listen, if there's anybody that wants the right to be able to have their son and make this move, it's LeBron, man. For all that he's done for the game of basketball, what he's done for me as a fan watching over the years. And the fact is that this is Bronny. You can get your foot in the door. Your dad could help you. I look at it in certain situations, you know, just in my life. But doesn't mean that you're going to stay. I mean, Bronny's going to have to work his tail off to be able to stay if he wants to stay. Mm-hmm. His dad might have helped him, got a foot in the door, but doesn't mean you're going to stay there. And I've always kept that with me in everything that I do, whether it's from, you know, the opportunities in the NFL when, you know, with Tennessee to where I am now. But you got to prove yourself. And it's really tough of doing the same thing that your father does or did and trying to make your own name. It's very hard because that shadow is always there. And I've always looked at it as the gift and the curse. You know, it's really good to have the last name, but it's made me have to work harder. And, you know, most people on the outside don't know, you know, what went into all that and how tough it actually is. But I've always looked at it as the gift and the curse, and I would never change it. And it's made me the person that I am today.
Yeah. I mean, you kind of went where we had thought you might, because we thought of you. It's like, when you look at Bronny, like Lawrence was wondering where you're feeling bad for him, right?
Yeah. I feel like he's handled it better than everyone. Yes. But I was wondering if there might be some stress about that we don't even know. That if you're him, are you like, man, I'm happy that I got drafted by the Lakers? Or are you like, man, it would have been nice to go live my own life, you know, maybe enjoy the road a little bit more, not worrying about the fact that your pops is in the suite next door, you're sharing the suite. Like, he's still got a life to live too.
Right, but Jarrett was a badass as a running back in a badass, a room full of great running backs.
The greatest college football team of all time.
At Miami, like, and you deserved your shots that you got. I'm not so sure that Bronny has played to a level that he hasn't played to the level that you had played to, you know? So it's a little different in that regard.
Yeah, I think for Bronny, and I'm with you on this, Lawrence, I think he has handled it really well. I think it's what we don't see on the flip side is like what he's dealing with. I didn't have to deal with that. I think the only thing similar to where everybody's talking about you and you either hear it or you see it. And I didn't grow up in the social media world in high school, but when my dad got sick, that's the only thing that I could kind of say that's similar to this situation, because everybody knew what was going on with my pops at that time. And so everywhere I went, people are staring at you. People are talking like you didn't know whether to be happy or whether to be sad, because then people, if you're happy, they're like, oh, he's trying to mask it. He's out having a good time because his dad's at home dealing with cancer. And then if you were having a bad day, they're like, oh, look, he's depressed. So I battled with that at that moment. So I can only imagine what he's battling, playing a sport, living in that shadow. It has to be tough on him, but it's going to be on him now. Like, dad, if that's the case, you're here now, you got to show that you belong and try to find a way to be able to find your niche. And it's not going to be easy, because regardless of if you are even on another team, if you weren't on the Lakers, people are always going to have that comparison to your father, which is unfair, because we both are growing up in households where our dads are considered goats. It's hard to do that. But I think what my dad did for me was to tell me, don't be like me, be better than me, and not at sports. Just be your own person. Try to be your own person. And it seems like their relationship is so strong that Lawrence, it doesn't feel like he needs to be off on his own. This is what life has been like. He's always been around dad. And so at some point, dad's going to phase out in the game, which doesn't look like it right now from watching him play at all. It's like unbelievable what we're seeing out of Bron. But at some point, he is going to have to let him go and spread his own wings. But for right now, if he gets this opportunity, he was going to make sure that he was going to make sure that it happened.
How excited are you for Sunday?
Oh, I'm super excited. Listen, Lawrence, I'm glad I'm talking to you now, because the last time the three of us were having conversations, it was before the London game, and you were like, well, I'm kind of nervous, JP. I'm kind of nervous, JP. So you know me, I'm over here talking my talk. And it was funny because I got off with you guys and then kind of went about the Friday and Saturday, and people are coming up to listen to the show. They're like, how confident are you? I'm like, dude, the Bears better win, dude. I told Lawrence Holmes that we're all good. I'm excited because, like you guys were talking about, this is meaningful football now. Like, it feels like playoff football. And I don't want to take, you know, everything that you guys were talking about earlier, but that's how I was feeling of watching those games last weekend of teams in a division and those feeling like playoff games. That's what this feels like to me. And, you know, regardless of if Jaden Daniels plays, I just think that this is, when you look at the NFC, this is a big game and another, you know, measuring stick for this Bears squad. And you got to keep up with the Joneses now, man. Everybody in the division's winning. And Lawrence, you said it. They're going into this weekend of winnable games for all of them. Now you got to keep up. And that's the hard part about being in the NFC North, which I think Bears fans and the Bears inside that locker room at Halas Hall are wearing like a badge of honor, knowing that it's not going to be easy every single week, that you're going to have to battle, that you're going to have to be tested. And week in and week out, I think it's just the way that this schedule is shaping up for this team. It's going to be make every game feel like that down the stretch.
Hey, Jarrett, I made a proclamation the other day. There were trumpets and there were crumpets and there were strumpets. And I said that the Bears are going
to... There were no strumpets.
Yeah, there were at my house. I'm sorry I didn't invite you next time. But there were... I think the Bears are going to sweep the Packers. I think this Bears defense has arrived in full. I think Caleb has shown that he is willing to do whatever it takes to win a game, and he's getting better every week. Some dude is booing, and he will be kicked out forthwith. I said good day, sir. I said good day to you, sir. So would you like to join me in my little corner of the world?
Speaks.
Yes.
I almost had to defend you late last night, bro.
Oh, no.
That's how we're like family, okay? So I'm driving home after GN Sports. You know, I don't leave out of WGN till, you know, like 11:30. So I'm driving home and I'm listening to the Bart Winkler show.
Uh-oh.
You know, late night. And he's like, your name comes up. And he's a huge Packer fan. Oh, let me go back. He's a huge fan of that team from Wisconsin.
Thank
that
you.
Plays NFL.
The one
football.
That sucks. The one
the
that one, sucks.
Yeah. The one up north.
And he was like, oh, you know, Matt Spiegel's over there talking about how the Bears are going to sweep them. And I had a tweet ready to go. And I was telling Bart, like, slow down, man. Yes. You're talking about my family. Slow down. But I really – listen, anything is possible, right? Anything is possible. The way that this
– I don't like that Bears, you put it in that category,
no, it doesn't
Jared.
Feel, I don't feel very supported. I don't feel very supported, honestly.
Listen – I don't want to put my name out there like that, but I got your back, Speaks.
Okay.
I got your back.
That's all right.
Here's what's gonna happen. Here's why I love that Jarrett's on our show. If it does happen, he is gonna show up here and like throw a party for you.
Well,
like he's gonna be the hype man.
I will accept that. It used to be that this show would throw its own parties. I get one thrown for me if that comes true.
Damn right.
All right.
Yeah, but you know what? There's a couple of things. One thing that really sticks out to me that I don't want to kind of gloss over, and it's just
is it that the Packers are really good? Is that what you don't want to gloss over?
No. It's not that. It's just that things are changing here in Chicago.
That's what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm. And I love the fact of the small things. I'm all about details and attention to detail. And listening to the staff and also DJ Moore and some of these guys talk about how they're paying attention to detail when it comes to walkthroughs shows me that there is a shift in this organization, because all the teams that I've been around, depending on where I was from Miami, man, walkthroughs were serious. Like it was serious. Like you sometimes needed to be taped up. You couldn't wear sandals because we were getting things done there. To other places, I won't name some of those other names of places I've been where it was just like, it's just a walkthrough, whatever. What you can get through those moments and the teaching points that coaches give you, and now understanding a little bit more about Caleb and his attention to detail, it speaks volumes to why they've had success since that powwow that they had with Shane Waldron to where they are now. And I see that as something positive and a shift on the offensive side that to me is moving in the right direction. And the possibilities are endless if Caleb keeps going the way that he's going. I love his stance where it's about whatever I have to do to help this team win, that's what I'm going to do. And Lawrence, you were like, well, I don't want him to just feel like it's too, you know, not a big enough game or whatever. Yeah, I heard you. Uh-oh.
That's all right, car, Jared.
That's a Tesla right there. It went off because I didn't touch the brake. And so then I'm listening to the score since
that's
I'm
That's right. You're driving an iPad right now.
Yeah, I'm driving the iPad. So I just think that he's at a good place right now early on. And I think that that's all we can really hope for as we look forward to the future. As this whole thing keeps going in the right direction and positive steps.
JP, so. You're the best. Thank you so much for jumping on as per usual. Thanks for taking care of our guy Emma a couple nights ago too. He was great with you guys. I really enjoyed seeing him on GN Sports. You can check JP out doing all the sportscasts and GN Sports on Channel 9. Sir, we will talk to you soon.
See you guys.
Oh, look at the applause for Jared Payton. It is the Spiegel and Holmes Show on 670 The Score. Mark Grody at the top of the hour with all the sound and news from Halas Hall. But when we come back, the NFL and I share our number one snack choice. I got the numbers to back it up. You're listening to The Score.
Spiegel and Holmes.
I definitely listened to 670 The Score growing up for sure. Driving around in the car with my dad, you'd always have it on.
Afternoons on The Score.
It is indeed Spiegel and Holmes on The Score. A rowdy, peppy bunch here in the Blue Cross Blue Shield Performance Studio. La Villa is right across the hall, and the food is awesome. The pizza and the pepper steak and everything. When I am anywhere where these are available, the Uncrustable is my snack of choice. The Wrigley Field Press Dining Room. I will sometimes skip whatever the actual meal is, and just have Uncrustables that they have on hand in the mini fridge. They're perfect. They don't ever miss. I read today that the genius was putting the jelly in the middle and then wrapping it in the peanut butter. And that's how it does not damage the bread upon thawing, and it lasts a while. That was their magic moment of Uncrustable wisdom.
Okay.
All right. And what I also read today is that it is the number one snack in the NFL. That NFL teams, when you factor in training camps and you adjust for the teams that did not share their data, because a lot of them did, that NFL teams go through at least 80,000 Uncrustables a year.
That's outstanding.
I'd like you to picture 80,000 Uncrustables.
If I am in my mind.
You are. How's that going for you?
It's going great.
The NFL... If you take those 80,000 Uncrustables and you spread them out one by one, it would cover 18 yards of a football field. So up from the goal line to the 18, completely covered in Uncrustables. I thought it'd be more than that, actually, but I guess they're kind of small.
They are small.
They're all small.
But it's fine. I love that. And it's funny because Baxter Holmes, no relation, did a story a couple years ago for ESPN on how peanut butter and jelly is the number one snack in the NBA, and that it's become like a thing of
course it has.
Who has what type of bread, what type of peanut butter, what type of jelly.
So it's a market inefficiency to draw free agents. I'm sure the Bulls are doing terribly at that. The Bulls only have, they have Wonder Bread, and they have like President's Choice peanut butter.
The thing is,
no insult to anyone who likes President's Choice.
They only have like the little containers of jelly and peanut butter, not even actual jars.
You got to open each one.
It's like, well, how much do I want to use?
Right. It's only plastic forks and stuff. Well, no. So that's interesting. So the NBA has it like on the high end and they totally, totally are meticulous about it. The NFL's like, Uncrustables did it right. Why don't we just partner with them? Here you go. And there they are. Because it's perfect. It's perfect every single time. The Denver Broncos lead the league in Uncrustable consumption with 700 per week. 700 per week. And one of one of our listeners came up and pointed out, Denver.
Oh, the Denver Broncos.
I know, Homer. I know. But they're a playoff team right now.
They are.
Look at the standings. Seattle, 320 Uncrustables per week. They're a playoff team.
Yeah, right, but then it drops off.
Yeah, Jacksonville.
In a way that doesn't hurt to help your
doesn't help the argument.
Yeah, because then it's Jacksonville and then Miami.
It wasn't even my argument. It was a listener's argument who identified the story we were going to talk about from the tease, ladies and gentlemen. That is a radio professional as a listener. She walked up and She nailed it.
Well, she walked up because she wants to win some sort of bet with her husband. That's what this was.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah. So basically, we paid off the bet. I don't know what you got to pay now, but you got to pay. Maybe it's a month's worth of Uncrustables for the Spiegel and Holmes show.
There you go. There you go. They start in the freezer. I mean, you leave them in the freezer. I put them in the fridge, but like you could leave them in the freezer, then just take them out. That's the other thing. Like our friend Barry Rosner takes them when he goes golfing because by the time you get to like the 10th hole and they've been in your golf bag for a couple hours, they've hit room temperature.
A little warm, yeah.
But, yeah, he's all right with that. Texters say that there's a Nutella Uncrustable. Shut your dirty mouth. Is there? That sounds unbelievable.
Yeah.
My God.
For guys that are trying to get the maximum amount of sugar and carbs, like during a game, it's a perfect thing.
Oh, during a game.
Or a practice.
It's a lot easier to just make it at home. It's just a sandwich.
Is an Uncrustable a sandwich?
Yeah. Well, no, it's a ravioli.
That's right. It's a dumpling.
Yeah.
That's what it is.
It's a ravioli.
That's what it is.
Make it at home.
No, Shane.
I'll give you the molds. No. I have the molds.
You mean a drinking glass?
Like, no. No, with the crimps and the bloods.
They both loved Uncrustables.
I think that's a way that you could barter peace. This is with Uncrustables.
Shane doing his own kind of.
He's doing a whole bit today, and it's great.
It is great.
That's why we love him.
It is.
You know who else we love? Mark Grody.
Oh, we do.
Mark Grody is getting ready. He was there at Halas Hall today. Bears hit, two words, is coming up next. We are here at the Blue Cross Blue Shield studio, and thanks a lot, Villa, for bringing us the food. It's Spiegel and Holmes here with you till 6 on the score.